Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Well, it's been a huge day in the pool for Australia. It's been a very big round of football. Scoot McClure's got the Olympics covered. Matthew Lloyd's got all matters football covered. And Jean Rooney, not far away from joining us. Scoot, you've had a big weekend in football and on the Olympics. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Jared. Oh, what a weekend of footy. What a weekend of sport. I got to say, it's obviously hard, and people in New South Wales and Victoria and South Australia will know being in lockdown. But we are blessed to be in lockdown at a time where there is so much sport to watch. Mm. And I think Channel 7 have been pretty good in their coverage.
Did you give Thorpe the votes today?
I thought the Thorpedo clearly got the three votes. Him calling what was going to happen in that race before it happened during the race,
yes,
was one of the great moments of the Olympics so far. But clearly the greatest moment was Ariane Titmus doing what we all thought she might do, but not thought that she actually would do, and that is knocking off Katie Ledecky in the Olympics in the 400. It was it was an amazing few minutes, Jared.
Yeah, it was exciting TV, exciting radio. I was listening in the car, I've got to say, Scoop.
Basil called it perfectly.
Yeah, Basil has risen to the moment.
Exemplary
call. Well played to Basil. Let's welcome this fellow for football. Give us your best Olympic moment to date, Lloydie.
It'd be that for sure, Jared. And I look forward to chatting to Gianna around. Was Kay Ledecky always going to try and break her
early?
That's what I found interesting, and how hard she powered home.
It was an amazing last 100.
It was,
wasn't it?
Magnificent.
Gian Rooney joins us live to talk all things Olympics. Of course, a gold medalist in Athens in 2004, two-time Sydney 2000 silver medalist. Gian, what a moment it was in the pool today.
Oh, hello, team. It was incredible. I think I joined the rest of Australia with saying that I am still buzzing. And how good is it at this time, feeling like we're all feeling, to have some joy? Because that's what sport does. When it's done well, when Ariane Titmus takes on the world and wins, it provides joy for all of us, and it was just a magical moment today. That race will go down in history as one of the greats.
Gian, can I just ask you, before the race, what chance did you give Ariane of actually knocking off Katie?
I said she'd win it. I'm working on Sunrise at the morning at the moment, and so every morning and we give our tips and our predictions. And I had spoken to Arnie earlier, before trials even this year, and I said, what do you think of? What is it going to take to win that 400? And she said, it's going to take a world record. And I believe it's going to take a world record to win that race. Mm-hmm. And whoever swims a world record wins it. She didn't have to go that fast, as it turns out this morning. But exactly how she has always executed her race is how she did it to win that final. And that's probably what I'm most proud of, in the fact that, let's face it, everyone has been tipping that showdown as the race of the swimming component of these Olympics. Ledecky versus Ariane Titmus. And with all the pressure, with all the build-up, with all the hype, she is still able to execute her race perfectly, which is to know that Ledecky always goes out hard. She always goes out hard. She breaks the hearts of every other competitor with her sheer will to go out hard and hang on. And once again, Arnie just held her nerve, knew that she had her if she could stay within reach for that final 100, and then turned on the afterburners and came home. It was magical.
Jean, we've got a bloke called Matthew Lloyd about to have a chat to you, and each and every Monday night he gives us his top seven of something. Would you be so kind to work on your top seven races of all time in the Olympics and share them with us at some stage before the swimming meet is out? Because I'd like to know where you have this victory for Arnie today as compared to, say, Kieran Perkins in 96, where he just qualified by a split second and came over the top. And just to remind us all of the great races that we do tend to forget over the journey.
Oh, my goodness. I can certainly try. Even some of them will be before I was alive. So
we'll keep it to the ones that you can remember.
Okay, perfect. In my living memory, where do I rate my top seven? I can tell you already that will be one of them. That was just given the history behind that showdown, given that Katie Ledecky, I believe, is the greatest women's distance swimmer we have ever seen.
Right.
Given that's the first time that she has been beaten at Olympic competition in the big ones that count. There is so much that has gone into it. The fact that this is the first time even an American film crew sent a camera and crew all the way over to Australia to follow Ariane Titmus. They spent 2 weeks in quarantine, did everything, just so that they could get footage of Arnie, knowing how big this showdown was going to be. There was a lot riding on that result this morning.
Well, now they might be following a coach for the next few weeks as well. He provided some entertainment. So has he always been that type of personality? Because I've never seen a reaction like it.
Dean Boxall, yes. I think it was Thorpey who said he's the common day Laurie Lawrence, and it's very apt. Dean is incredibly passionate, as you can tell. He is very emotional, and he wears his heart on his sleeve, and we're used to reactions like that from Dean. That's why there was a camera trained on him this morning with that final. He is so passionate. He's an incredibly motivating coach for his athletes day in, day out at training. And Arnie and Dean have been together for a long time now. There's a wonderful story about Arnie's family. The Titmuses moved from Tasmania when she was young to give her the best chance to chase her swimming dream. So they moved the whole family to Queensland, where they thought that she would have the best possible facilities, coaches, support network set up around her. And so it's been a huge journey for the whole family, and to watch her family watch her win that Olympic final means, I mean, as a, I can't even imagine what it's like for them to go, we were justified in making that move. Yes, you know, we've all benefited from it, but we were justified all those years ago uprooting the whole family and taking them to Queensland for Arnie to chase her dream.
Well, she's back in action tonight in the 200-metre free.
The rivalry heats up again, Jim.
Yeah, she's up against her good friend Ledecky. She's favoured to win that race as well.
I was about to say, no one said it yet. I believe Arnie will win the 200 free.
Okay.
I've seen back that 400. The monkey's off. Yep, the monkey's off the back. She's in form. That carries you through. Once you have a moment like that early on in something like the Olympics, I believe it carries you through. And I'd love to see the challenge. Can't wait for the challenge that will be presented to Arnie in this 200 free. But I reckon she wins it.
And Jared, as we've seen, Gian's been in good tipping form on Sunrise as well. So it'd be a brave man or woman to go against her.
Yes, indeed. And the pressure comes on the legend as well. Ledecky's never been in this position before where she's the one with the pressure now to prove herself.
And don't get me wrong, I still think Ledecky will come away with two individual gold medals out of here. The 8 and the 15, I think, is hers to lose. So the distance events, I think, will go Ledecky's way. But I think Arnie showing her speed, she had a fabulous 200 of the trials a few weeks ago. And so momentum on both sides. I think both these ladies are going to have quite a few medals hanging around their neck by the end of these games.
Gian, phenomenal swim by Kyle Chalmers in the fourth leg of the 4x100. Where does he stand in regards to the individual race for the 100? Where would he rank, you think, prediction for where he could possibly finish?
Well, I think after watching him in that relay, I think he wins the 100. I think he defends his title, which is a big call because for so many of the athletes, that this delay of the Olympics has challenged them in more ways than one. Kyle had shoulder surgery. There was a time when he didn't know if he'd be able to put enough training together to find that speed again. And he's one of the fiercest competitors out there. To watch him in that relay, because I think he started about fifth after the three legs before him. I think he came into the water fifth. To still hold his nerve and know the ultimate racer in him is like, I want to get going. He's an absolute beast when it comes to competition, and he would have been holding himself back to not just want to go flat out from the very first moment he hit the water, but he's still, his race, stuck to his race plan, and again, comes home like a steam train. And that's what he did. Given another 2 metres, he would have got them in silver medal position. So I think watching everyone else in that race, the great Caleb Dressel, who will be his main rival in that 100 free, looked good, but Kyle looked better. And that's very exciting.
Well, Gian, we love Olympians on this program. We also love people willing to go out on a limb and make some bold predictions few people on the show have done that the last couple of weeks, and you've done that as well. So we look forward to your predictions coming true, and we'll touch base with you later in the program. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Lovely to chat.
Jeanne Rooney there, 2004 Athens gold medalist, two-time silver medalist at Sydney as well.
Well, Jeanne got hers right.
And Sam didn't, is that what you're saying?
I didn't say anything. We'll take a break.
Final siren. The Kangaroos have won their fourth of the season. They have given Carlton a smashing, winning by 39 points.
I have absolute belief in this group. I think we've seen some growth over the last period, and today was really disappointing because it didn't follow that trend. So that hurts. That hurts the playing group, the coaching staff, our fans. The question is, do I have belief? Absolutely. And I'll keep saying it. We've got some work to do. We're not good enough yet, clearly, and that's why we're not playing finals. But going forward, this group will play finals. I'm very confident.
The players look to me like they've given up on the coach. But during that third quarter, they gave up on the coach. Now, the demise is coming for David Teague. I think we can all been around footy long enough to know which way this is going.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy and the Kia Sorento Drive Car of the Year. Yeah, it was a bad day for Carlton. It was a really good day for North Melbourne, and they have continued their improvement since the bye.
I'd like to hear from Heather, by the way.
Well, I hope Heather is listening.
13-13-32, Heather.
Heather, I think, now knows why we were so questioning last week, because the Kangaroos have shown they've got this in them. And last week, they let themselves down. Lloydie, but let's deal with the Carlton issue. Carlton are having a review. Will the coach survive?
Well, the weekend isn't going to help him, Jared. I thought he would survive due to the fact that they can't beat the teams above them, but they've been able to beat those around them and below them. But when you lose to the bottom side in the manner that they did, if you're a board member saying to yourself, can we potentially get a better coach who could get more out of these players? I reckon a lot of them would say yes, Jared. So I thought they had Tui's, what's the word? He had no McGovern, he had no Curnow, he had no Mackay, and he had no Casbolt. So it's probably one of the worst forward lines I've seen put out there.
But Casbolt's not in their best team still now,
is he? No, he's not. But they had no tall target to kick to. Patrick Cripps started out of the goal square, and Matty Kennedy would swap with him occasionally at full forward. But that
was that the issue, or was it more they can't defend turnover?
That was the issue. They had to defend for their lives. That was their only way of winning, getting repeated. And the first quarter was okay. They had 15 inside 50s. Just didn't kick two goals, five, missed shots and all that sort of thing. But after that, it was damning. After halftime, 13 goals to six. There was a lack of care to defend or care of system. All those sorts of things was there, which would be really concerning if I was a board member of Carlton with David Teague. And I'd say to myself, can a Don Pike, for example, make Petrevski Seaton a better player? Can he make a Paddy Dow a better player? Can he make Liam Stocker a better player? Even Patrick Cripps can be a better player. He doesn't defend that well.
Mm.
So they're all the questions that if they keep being yes, well, Dave will be in trouble.
When you say he doesn't defend that well, what do you mean when you talk about Cripps?
Well,
as in he doesn't run hard enough defensively?
Yes, and he doesn't stick tackles. I don't think he has the urgency to defend like a good captain. Like Trent Cotchin turned things around. I think someone needs to be that demanding of the captain to say, if you're not doing it, well, what hope have we got of the rest underneath doing it? And I think that's an issue for Carlton with their leader in that manner. And Doherty had his issues as well in defence. More, he was probably looked a bit nervous and fumbly when he was there. But I felt for Jones, to be honest, Jones and Wiedering on the weekend. I know Larky kicked seven, but I wouldn't have wanted to be the fullback in that side on the weekend.
Well, it's going to continue. I believe they're on Friday Night Football, the Blues. Is that right, Scoop?
Or yes. It hasn't been confirmed, but there will be. It's basically the only last option. It was going to be Essendon and the Swans, but that old issue that we talked about a few weeks ago, Luke Beveridge, Jared, has reared its head again with
5-day break.
5-day breaks. So they're going to play on Saturday night in Queensland, that game, which is going to be at Marvel Stadium. The Blues will play on Friday night against the Saints. And just on that, Carlton have just released their injury update. Eddie Betts, an ankle, out for
Looked like he was out for the year.
For 2-3. So You have to ask the question whether it's the last time we've seen Eddie Betts in a Carlton jumper. I hope not, because he wouldn't want his last game to be a two-disposal game against North Melbourne when they get beaten by 40 points. But
And the other decision they've got is, which I would say no, is Charlie Curnow. Do you play him? And I don't think after being out this long, two games in the seconds is enough.
Mm-hmm.
They see him every day, every hour, all those sorts of things, so they know better than I do. But I'd be giving someone of that importance longer than a couple of VFL games after how long he's missed.
I asked that to Jared last week. I think, Jared, you said a similar thing, didn't you? That
it's hard to know unless you're in there. It's impossible to know, but I know Andrew Russell's a Jet. He's under some pressure himself, but his track record is second to none. So whatever he goes with and the doctors,
yep,
I'd run with.
What do you see as the major problem at the Blues, Jared, or is it still the thing that the Couch revealed 6 or 7 weeks ago, the defensive frailties? Are you seeing something else?
Well, quite clearly, they didn't have a great side in on the weekend. When you're hitting in the, you know, when you're losing the Norm Smith medalist, sorry, the Coleman medalist, that doesn't help. But, I mean, I think at this stage, I think they're a better group than what they're showing. I think their midfield is a better group than what they're showing. But they got chopped up by a very young midfield. And that's not a great advertisement for any coaching team or that particular group. I don't think they're as far away as some people say, but there's a lot of people lining up to say, if you have a really, really close look at their list, it's not that flash. Well, yeah, let's say it's halfway between the two, but it's probably not where they think it is, and that's why I think list management will be under the pump, because they clearly thought they were playing finals. You don't go and get the blokes that they went and got if they don't think they're playing finals. So their question for me, Lloydy, is what do they do? Do they accept that they've blown this rebuild and go again? Or do they deny what's obvious at this stage and they load up, try and get another player?
Well, I think they're in the mix for Chera. So to me, it means they're not going. He's quite young, though, isn't he?
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be a problem.
But then it's not.
Depends on how much you're paying. Because he's not a 700.
Yep. Well, their cap is basically
blown
now. Mm. And Zach Williams done a hamstring probably out for the year. He has had a horrible first year on the money that he's on. And I know that some of that's been he's been suspended and some of it's been injured, but he just hasn't performed. And,
well, he hasn't fulfilled the role that they got him for, and that was to play midfield. So it's a bust at this stage. Hopefully he can turn it around.
Hey, Lloydie, I just wanted to ask you about Max King. What an amazing performance that was against the Eagles. I know they didn't get the win, but I'm just asked a few people today. So the only player under 50 games to take 8 contested marks and kick 6 in a game. And I think he's only the second ever Saint to take 8 or more contested marks in a game. I think Stewie Lowe currently is the only one.
Buckets. It was a breakout game for him, Lloydie, clearly.
Oh, it was sensational, and everything came together. He's marking, he's kicking, and we saw that side of him, the aggressive side, marking in the air. He had a young player on him himself in Edwards, which he'd been taking probably the best defender. Why McGovern wasn't on him earlier is another
question.
That
was strange.
But, that was unbelievable to see, and it's just a taste of what we're going to see over the next decade of just how good he is.
So, Lordy, with his kicking, did you see something differently he was doing, or was it just he got his confidence up and he was utilising
He's been
that?
Good. He's been had a good 6 weeks with it. In terms, I think he's kicked 13 goals, or 16 goals, 3 or 4 in the last 7 weeks. But he's more compact. He's over the ball, shoulders over the ball.
So you've noticed a physical change?
Yes. And he's a very mentally strong person.
Mm.
A lot of guys could lose their way after what he went through, but full credit to him and his coaches.
Tell me about the sides at the top of the ladder, Lloydy. How do you see the Cats, and what did you take out of the Demons and the Dogs?
With the Dogs, they started well, they finished well, they were smashed at the hitouts, but dominated the clearances.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an issue for Melbourne, why Gawn wins so many, but they don't win. I think the Dogs have good talls, they have good smalls. It's going to be interesting with Hugel Hagen. They've got the Crows this week. I think he'll play again.
Shaki utilised in a different
role
as well.
Shaki goes back. That'll be a good test for him on a drier day where I think he can be a bit slow off the mark at times, Shaki, but they'll need him with Keith going out. So, no, they're going really well, but I think Geelong are going better. I think Geelong, their depth used to concern me, and I thought they had an over-reliance on the top end.
Yep.
Now I think when Narkle's your sub and he comes on and has 8 clearances in about 30 minutes...
So you're declaring him as the premiership favourite?
Well, I won't yet because my Kia top 7 is is just that, who I'm declaring.
I like
7
it.
Down the 1.
Don't declare him then.
I was just reading again today that Daniel Taylor, you're unlikely to get a new contract at Adelaide.
Phew.
He just looks like a certainty, the perfect fit for the Bulldogs, does he not? I mean, they're crying out for a key back, and I know he's had his injury concerns, but and his brother's played there before.
Not sure
anyway.
The history.
With his brother?
The Italia investigation.
Yeah, with the final.
Mm.
That's sometimes you've got to move on from those things.
But Mark's in South Melbourne wants to talk about Max King. G'day, Mark.
G'day, guys. I'm Jack absolutely wrapped the St Kilda, got it right internally. They're getting outside help for Max King. Finally, they've got something right. And the other one, guys, that I've got a lot of St Kilda supporters, is I've got a lot of members to sign up this year. People are questioning, what are the AFL actually going to do in reimbursing supporters like they did last year for the lack of games? No one in the media is actually looking after the supporters and asking the AFL or the clubs, what are they actually going to do to the supporters this year? They've only been for, you know, full membership to four games. What reimbursements are we getting?
Wouldn't they just hope your understanding, Mark, of that every single person in this game is bleeding? The game's bleeding.
I think everyone around the country is
Everyone's bleeding.
Bleeding
in all walks of life, every business. And I know how hard it's been on you and fans to go and watch their team, but there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, they could reimburse pro rata. I understand what you're saying. Mm. I understand Mark's point as well. It's just it's a brutal time, Jared, in the game. And you know, my information is even if we do come out of the lockdown that we're in tomorrow night, there's not going to be any crowds in Victoria. So it's another game that we're going to be robbed of. And the AFL are making contingency plans all around the country about what's happening
there,
in
looking
finals.
Looking at the finals, Joondalup up is a compound, a golf course. It's the got all the air, all the accommodation you need to.
And they've told Joondalup,
how's a hub?
They've told Joondalup, Jared, don't take any
bookings.
Any bookings from mid August to the end of September.
Yep.
Just in case we need you. So I assume that's happening somewhere in South Australia. It's probably happening somewhere in Queensland as well. They've just got to be ready to pick up and move the whole comp when they need to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a question of how much latitude will the government give if there's a couple of breakouts. I mean, you can't ship everybody out. There's three people become positive, and then you shut the state down.
Particularly in Perth. I mean, they've got a record for
you get
two cases. Imagine on the Wednesday grand final week, everyone's in Perth. Mm. Sorry, got two cases. No crowd. Anyway, we digress. Start more with Lordy on Sports Day right after this.
A sports update for Tyre Power, your trusted tyre experts.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Yeah, we could have sold that space scoop if you had been up to it. We were just talking off air about Ash Barty and the big letdown in many respects. But, Lloydie, you've got an insight as usual.
Well, speaking to a someone very high up at tennis.
Who'd you run into? Come on.
I don't want to. Because he told me something pretty...
Well, I could guess. I bet you I could guess.
And he said that...
Does he live in the same suburb as you and Jared?
Yeah, and right. He said that on the level of importance for Ash, even though she played, was very, very low down. And after winning Wimbledon...
Climbed the mountain.
She climbed the mountain. And it's the motivation levels, the training probably that you've done since. There's no way she should have lost that game. It just shows where they're at mentally sometimes after winning a tournament like Wimbledon.
I find that really hard to believe. Like, there's no doubt there's some validity in the come-down factor. But, Jared, Ash has, throughout her entire career, prioritised and done everything that she could have to play for Australia.
Mm-hmm.
She's been part of a whole campaign. In many ways, she's been the face, along with Paddy Mills, of the Australian Olympic team. Anyway, I thought we could have had a bigger conversation throughout the coverage about what happened to Ash. Because she's a gold medal favourite. She's world number one. And she was beaten in straight sets by someone who had one tour victory in her career. I mean, it's the biggest story of the Olympics so far for me.
But clearly she's just had a letdown. She was beaten by a no-name from Spain. Had one tour
victory.
I know.
I just wanted someone to be able to tell me that. I wanted to talk about it. Can we talk about it now?
But you'd love to know. Say, asking this person, what would she rather lose?
There's no question.
Yeah. And so you're not in a headspace to drop that game at Wimbledon, yet you are at the Olympics. So in hindsight, you maybe shouldn't go.
So you can't stay up for that long.
Maybe it just shows where the Olympics is at for a tennis player in terms of importance.
Well, I think it's for her anyway. Mm. I mean, she didn't get herself, and it might have been just the jubilation of Wimbledon because Djokovic, he's keen, and Murray, he's won two. They're probably the highlights of his career. He won one other major for memory, but the Olympics experience for him has been pretty extraordinary. But, I mean, coming off of Wimbledon, first person to win it since Yvonne, 50 years on, unbelievable.
So just recapping a few things that happened in the Olympics today. So gold for Ariane Titmus, as we heard from Jan Rooney, in the 400 free. Bronze to Emma McKeon in the 100 fly. We take out the bronze in the 4x1 men's freestyle. Dan Watkins in the canoe slalom, qualifying second fastest for the C1 final, but he had a bad error, cost him In the final, he finished ninth, unfortunately. In the Hockey Roos smashed China 6-0 earlier. Mm. Rugby Sevens go down to Argentina 29-19. I don't know if you guys were up watching the triathlon. Absolute chaos at the start of the men's triathlon this morning. Half the field was blocked by a broadcasting boat off the starting deck. The race had to be restarted. It was just, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
Saw the vision up on the screen behind it. Didn't look good.
No, it wasn't good. And something that's not good, it's not good for Sydney, and it's not good for anyone wanting to kick 1,000 goals this year. Lance Franklin has been offered a one-game ban by Michael Christian for that elbow on Luke Ryan. I thought they might find a way to get him off just so that we get to 1,000 this year. Doesn't seem likely, unless he challenges.
No, you should jump at that one, Lloydie. Take the one and move on.
And I think his record against Essendon is as big as any other team he's ever played against. So, Sam, if you get that up, yeah, he's, I reckon, close to 5 a game.
Gee.
Over the journey across for Hawthorn and for the Sydney Swans.
Before we go, and we're under the pump, Lloydie, give us your synopsis of the Bombers.
Well, Ben Rutten pretty much said afterwards that he, I don't know, can't think of the exact terms, but didn't surprise him in terms of the way they went. It was disappointing, though, to be 14 points up or so, 16 points up at halftime,
yep.
Kick one goal after halftime. I think their forward line is an issue moving forward.
That's why they pay him the big bucks, Jared. Lance Franklin has kicked 73 goals against Essendon in 17 games,
yep.
More than any other team, average of 4.3 goals a game.
Merritt, Parrish, and Stringer had, I think it was less than 10 possessions between them after halftime.
And full credit to the Giants, who we went hard at last week, because I think they go after players better than most.
Yep.
They've gone after Sam Walsh with Matty DeBoer. Mm-hmm. They got that one. They went up. Aish would have been a surprise going after Darcy Parrish.
He would have been as surprised as anybody. Yeah. He did a good job.
Nick Hine didn't do a lot. And Whitfield is a player that I reckon, as Ben Rutner evolves his coaching, he's big on our system will take care of things. But when Whitfield runs around doing what he does, 35 touches. I was saying, I don't think there's a player like Whitfield in the game. Walsh is very unique with how he runs in the midfield. But who else runs like Whitfield does? You've got Hind and these guys who are
dynamic.
They're
straight liners, though, aren't
they? Yeah, but this guy just...
Scully would have been the most comparable one in his prime, maybe?
As a wingman, yeah.
I was trying to think of someone else. It's a good question.
But he didn't have the same dexterity with the skills left side, right. So it means his running patterns are slightly more creative because he's got the weaponry to back it up.
Matthew Lloyd is here for McDonald's. Who'd you kick your most goals against, Lloydie? I've got your stats up in front of me.
Was it your mob?
You kicked 86 against the Blues. You kicked 86 against the Tigers as well. Lloydie liked to save it for the big Victorian rivals. More with him after this.
Matthew Lloyd for McDonald's. The Mac family is here. Free limited edition glass with every medium or large Mac family meal.
Yes, Lloydie is here. Some more footy chat from round 19 to talk about. There's some stories to unpack from Lloydie's stats page, Jared, particularly when he goes into state. But that's maybe questions for another time.
Lloydie, the Brisbane Lions, they reasserted themselves after halftime, aided and abetted by the Suns, who kicked the ball back to them, I reckon, 12 times in the first 10 minutes of the third quarter.
Yeah, really, they get the win and they get a little bit of a confidence boost, but still they get Hawthorn this week. So I'm just not sure they lost to St Kilda, didn't they? And they had a bad loss. They got towed up again 2 weeks in a row, Melbourne. So, they're not going that well, Brisbane. What it was, I suppose, from a perspective of finding form after halftime, they kicked 13 goals in a row or whatever like that. But still, Chris Fagan's having to give it to them at halftime on a number of occasions to try and get them going. So that would worry me.
Tough result for Stewie Jew after having a really good 3 weeks. Just looked as if they were going to have a line in the sand game. And it just fell away so badly, which I guess is a young team sort of symptom. But, gee, he would have been flat given that they'd fought back really hard a couple of weeks prior after being headed by the Tigers, got the win. They were starting to build a nice bit of club trait that you don't give it away, and all of a sudden the white flag went up.
Yeah, and that's the way they lose. So you cop losing, but they just, like I said, the way they beat Richmond, I thought, what a big stage to do that in. Yep. They backed it up again, but then you get 30 points up and you lose by 50. There's something not quite right there with the Suns. And you hope that we're not saying they're still young, there comes a time they've got to grow up, you would have thought.
Can I just quickly interject? The round 20 fixture has just in the last few seconds been confirmed by the AFL. So St Kilda and Carlton will play Friday night. There's five games. The first game at 12:20 over the Saturday. It's Bulldogs Adelaide at Ballarat. North Melbourne Geelong down at Blundstone.
Go slowly here, please.
Sorry. Yeah. Bulldogs Crows at Ballarat. North Melbourne Geelong down in Hobart. Blundstone Arena 1:15. Gold Coast against Melbourne with that that game. The venue has still yet to be confirmed. That's 3:10. You'd expect that game to be at Metricon. Collingwood West Coast is at the MCG. That's the Fox game at 4:15. Standalone Saturday night game on 7 is Essendon and Sydney at the Gabba. Originally supposed to be at Marvel, but the five-day break hurt them. Sunday, Hawthorn versus the Brisbane Lions down in Launceston. Giants and Port Adelaide still that venue to be decided. That's a Fox game. Well, they're all Fox games on the Sunday. And Fremantle-Richmond with a 5:10 start is the final game of round 20. So five games on the Saturday, three on the Sunday, one on the Friday.
Interesting, the Tigers and Freo both have had some injury concerns. Dustin Martin clearly not playing. Fife won't play, you wouldn't think, for the rest of the season.
And Walters.
Walters is out. Has had a pretty average year, Michael Walters, unfortunately. But they need to finish the season off a bit better than they've displayed over the last couple of weeks.
Big game for both clubs. Richmond have lost five of their last six. Fremantle just so inconsistent. So
still think they can make the eight, the Tigers?
They've got the best run of everyone fighting for it. But when you, well, I thought the Gold Coast looked like a good game for them a few weeks back. So they still believe, and I thought the weekend might have been okay, but still out of Richmond, they've still look at this next 4 weeks and think we can get there and all those sorts of things. But they were taught a lesson by Geelong. Who, it was a fair margin from last year's grand final to now.
Matthew Lloyd is here for Maccas. You've got your top seven coming up, Lloydie, yes. Which is?
It is my rankings and seeds a month out from the finals.
Oh. The top seven. Okay, it'll be interesting to see who
He's
is
gone
eighth.
Big.
I think the Giants are in a bit of trouble to make the rankings, but we will wait and see. What's Geelong's biggest question they need to answer between now and the start of the finals?
How they play Radigalia and Stanley heading into the finals.
An Aussie update for Red Energy. Red Energy is green and gold. For real Aussie energy, switch to Red today.
Yeah, quick Aussie update. Disappointment for Steph Gilmore today in the surfing, Jared. A shock exit from the opening round this morning. She lost her heat to South African Bianca Buitendag. She said afterwards that she just took the wrong wave. Simple as that. So that was a huge disappointment for Steph. And the swimming heats tonight from 8 o'clock. 200 women's free, the 200 men's fly, the 200 women's IM, and the 1500 metre women's freestyle heats.
Okay, let's get stuck into this.
Matthew Lloyd's top seven for Kia's Sorento, drive car of the year.
Rightio, who's going to win the flag? This is the big ranking coming from Matthew Lloyd. In seventh position, Lloydie?
In seventh position, the West Coast Eagles. I think even though they're two games clear of eighth,
yep.
They're still a fair way off the rest.
So they're in seventh position.
They're in seventh position.
Speak.
In sixth, I've got Port Adelaide. Even though they're fourth on the ladder, I think Port Adelaide are my sixth rank.
Okay,
agree with that.
A lot of players underdone, and I still don't like their defence. In fifth position, I've got the Brisbane Lions. I think that even though they're sitting in fifth at the moment, but you're not playing great football at the moment. In fourth spot, I've got Melbourne.
Gee.
So over a six-week period.
Three wins, one draw.
Three wins, one draw. I like that Brown's in the team, but he's not scoring that often. Tom McDonald has scored 3-0, 1-0, 3-1-1 in his last 6 weeks. So
not enough.
I feel they have hard workers, but there's no real star factor in that forward group that I think is going to hurt them. I know you need a team to do it, but getting them to that point could hurt.
Ask you the question I asked Gary Lyon on the couch about 4 weeks ago. Should they put their best forward from the middle into the forward line?
Petrarca.
Well, they may have to be bold, Jared. I wouldn't say permanently, but Dusty Martin does it at the right times. And it could be something like that, Jared, that he may say, okay, we've gone from first to second, now we're third. We're sliding a little bit here. What do I have to do?
Okay, so Melbourne are in fourth, Lloydie.
The Swans.
Wow.
Have jumped to three for me.
Swans who are sixth on the ladder, percentage of 118.
Buddy's out for a week.
Buddy's out for a week. I still think they can take care of the Bombers with how they're going. I think their back line is uncompromising. Their forward line pressure is relentless. They've got a midfield that has experience, youth, and they have a forward line that if Papley doesn't get you, Franklin will get you. Haywood can get you. Heaney can get you. So I think they're just getting better and better.
Okay, so the Swans are in third. In the top two?
Yeah, I have the Bulldogs in second spot. Tim English in the ruck. Probably what tips them down to number two. But apart from that, they're going well. But obviously Alex Keith, Gardner, goes out. I think the Cats have a deep squad, healthy, with Duncan a few others to come back. And they are my number one side. And they've been there to the well. Haven't got there. I think the hunger to go one step better.
Catch for the flag.
Mm. Jared, you don't have to give me your top seven, but a quick 10-second analysis. Where would you be different than Lloydie?
Probably have Melbourne up one.
Yep.
Other than that, and the Swans down one. Other than that, as usual, he nailed it.
So you've got the Cats top as well, above the Dogs?
Right now I have, yeah.
Okay. Cats winning the flag. What's on couch tonight, quickly?
Quickly, we'll probably have a look at the Demons' woes.
And?
Carlton might just get a mention.
Okay, maybe just once. And the Classifieds on Nine later on. See you tomorrow. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. And across Tasmania for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. If you're just tuning in, welcome to the hour. Big hour coming up, Jared. Chris Anstey is going to chat to the Boomers. They did what they had to do against Nigeria. They went overly impressive.
That's all you have to do.
Paddy Mills was pretty impressive. And I thought Dante Exum, Jared, who we haven't seen a whole lot of, his energy around the court was pretty impressive. He's pretty raw, but I still think we're a chance of meddling. And Julian Linden, who was actually there live in the pool.
Poolside.
Watching it all happen.
Is that Ariane, on the deck? Is that on the deck?
On the deck.
Yeah.
As Ariane
on the Ledecky.
Titmus overran Katie Ledecky in the last 100. It was, I got to say, Jared, it was an amazing race.
Was it bigger than Kathy?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
But I thought Basil called it exceptionally well.
Yes, good.
And I thought Ian Thorpe's special comments were perfect. He actually said halfway through the race, when she was half a length behind,
yes,
that she was pacing it perfectly,
yes,
and it was all set up for the final 100 sprint.
Okay, nice work.
Exactly what happened. So we're going to talk to Julian Linden as well from News Corp about that. But let's do the wash-up from round 19, Jared. Where would you like to start?
Well, why don't we whip through the games as they were played, because that's...
Not where I'd like to start.
Well, you want to go in reverse order. You've been pretty strong over the weekend, Scoop, I must admit.
What did I say?
About the coach of the Blues.
What? I haven't said anything yet.
I saw something on Twitter.
Oh, yes. No, it wasn't about the coach. That was just about the club.
Oh, was it?
It was a pretty embarrassing performance in the end.
So it kicked off Port Adelaide and the Magpies. I thought the Pies' ball move was superb.
Yeah, they looked different.
Yeah, they were really good. In fact, I enjoyed that game.
And they actually got closer than anyone thought.
Particularly without Pendlebury.
I know, but what happened is, Charity, everyone turned over to the...
Swimming?
To the opening ceremony.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
At halftime.
Yes.
Because the game sort of felt like it was a little bit over.
I agree.
And then woke up the next morning, Port Adelaide won comfortably. People said, they were never really... Collingwood got within...
Two goals.
Was it 10 points?
Something like that,
late in the third?
Yep.
Like, they were in the game.
They were definitely in the game. There's no question about that. Port Adelaide, one of the less convincing fourths at the present time.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of work to do. But, I mean, they've got guys in Rosie... Butters,
just coming back, Dersma,
just coming back. They've got
some guys out of form as well, and they're still fourth.
Yeah, I mean, Fantasia's coming back next week. We think Robbie Gray still to come into the side. So
Charlie's been a bit flat.
Charlie has been flat. I mean, Charlie has been okay, but he hasn't been dominant.
Agreed.
Marshall's been okay, hasn't really come along. Georgiades has had a couple of big games, but. You know, couldn't get near it. Couldn't buy a goal on the weekend.
Which happens when you're still a kid, I guess.
Well, it happens when there's three other guys jumping at the same ball. Yeah. And that's what's of some interest to me. You've got Laddams, Georgiades, Marshall and Big Charlie.
They're not getting the S word, Jared. They're not getting the separation.
No, well, they're all jumping at the same nut. There's no doubt. It looks like kick to kick in the schoolyard.
Same nut. And then Saturday.
Well, Saturday we had...
North Melbourne
chop up the Blues. Now, this actually confirms my point to Heather last week. Heather got on and
that's right. I wonder
and had a crack at me for not being more positive about the Blues,
About the Roos.
About the Roos, And I've been positive for a long, long time about the Roos. I like their rebuild.
You have been.
Midfield out.
You were holding them to a higher account. That's what you were doing.
That's all. I was holding them to the account that they actually told us all with their previous performances what they should be held to.
Yep.
They were a side on the improve, and they've let themselves down, and they could have beaten the Bombers. I mean, the Bombers were gettable.
Definitely.
And it was only just poor ball use inside the forward 50, and ball use has been their strength.
Particularly in the first half.
Yes, exactly right. So anyway, I wasn't surprised that they came out and had a win. Wasn't surprised that they put in a good performance. Was surprised at the margin. A shy lacking in the finish. And
I thought 39 points actually flattered the Blues in the end.
It's put the microscope right back on the club, the coach, CEO, the list manager, everybody.
Yeah, I thought it was really disappointing. I mean, I haven't asked you off air, Jared, what vision you've got. But, I mean, the couch sort of started this whole thing months ago when you were highlighting the defensive inefficiencies of the club, to put it lightly.
Yeah, I mean, the whole system's been poor. It's improved to a large degree.
But, Jared, it happened all over again on the weekend, indeed. From what I could see. Without looking at behind the goals vision, they were sliced in half on turnover. And they just looked like they didn't have...
Well, that hasn't improved at all.
Yeah.
Right from the word go.
And you know, I've read some stuff criticising Jacob Wiedering. Wiedering was always going to have one forward get hold of him at some point. Like, he's been holding up
before. He had one bad game. Get over it.
He had one average game, and Larky got hold of him. And Larky looks like he might be a really good player in the future. But for me, the defensive frailties were on show.
Okay, so what happens next? I mean, we all know about that. What happens next?
Well, what do you mean? I mean, the review will come out and they will get a new coach.
Simple as that. You think it's just cut and dried as that?
But didn't I say this to you a month ago?
Yes, you have said that a month ago, but you also said that Sam Mitchell was going to be coaching next week. So I just need you to sort of give me...
That was nasty.
No, I was actually kind to you last week.
That was nasty, that was. That was a little barb.
Well, I'm asking you...
in all seriousness...
Give some detail around your comment.
Yeah, I think that there are people in high places at the Carlton Football Club who saw Saturday as a confirmation of what they had long feared. And that is that they probably need change at the top. The most interesting thing about all of this is that if and when they do part ways with David Teague, Jared, who will their first phone call be to?
Is that a given? Is that a take it to the bank? They will part ways? Now, I want you to think carefully about this answer, because at this stage, your strike rate is 0-1.
That's rubbish.
Oh, is it?
What, you're gonna fall into that pit that other people over the weekend have been falling into, are you?
No, I'm asking the bank?
I'm 0-1, am I?
Well, you're not 0-1 yet.
A lot of people said Joe Danaher wasn't going anywhere. I might get find that audio. A lot of people said that Lachie Neale wasn't going anywhere. A lot of people said Mitch McGovern wasn't going anywhere. People said on record for 3 years that nothing happened at the Adelaide camp. I've got a book,
I know you've got a lot right, Scoop.
But don't say I'm 0-1 when we don't have the answer yet. That's a bit.
Oh, so is it still possible?
As I said to you in the first hour, Jared, there are several mechanisms in which Alistair Clarkson won't be coaching there next year.
Okay, I like the boy. I like it. You're going to stick to your guns? Fine. Just means we can revisit in round one. You're either going to be the king of the media throng, or the barbs will be coming. I guess you know that.
I think the barbs
have already arrived, have they?
I've already come, Jared.
Okay.
I'm fully barbed.
Righto, let's move on. We've got after that. Oh, no, it was a bad one. This was a shocker. Brisbane were poor. Suns were sensational to halftime. And then Suns fell off a cliff you would not believe.
I don't think I've ever seen a cliff come like that as quick. I was like, I watched a different team.
Someone thought I was hard on the Suns.
I didn't think you were hard on the Suns.
I wasn't hard on the Suns.
In fact, I thought you were actually a bit light on the Suns.
I was very kind to the Suns.
I thought you were generous. Because they were that good in the first
half.
They
were sensational. What was going to beat Brisbane? Quick ball movement.
Yeah.
What did they do?
Quick ball movement. They slowed down.
What did they do in the second half?
Chip. It was weird.
And then just kick the ball back to the Brisbane Lions.
Do you think, Jared, that was a coaching instruction?
No, couldn't have been.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Could not have been.
So it's a mentality thing,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, no, they... I mean,
look, but is it a player mentality thing that seeps in?
I don't know,
it was weird.
It was scary that they couldn't strike out of that, given that against Richmond, they got headed and they came good. And their previous win, they got headed and they came good. So anyway.
We don't have time to do the whole round, but I'll give you one 30-second analysis of the grand final preview that many thought it was.
Yep.
The Bulldogs and the Demons.
Righto.
What did you take? What was your number one take out of that game?
There's two issues for the Melbourne.
Okay.
My number one take is if they played 10 times, it's probably going to be 6-4 or 5-5.
I would agree with that.
Melbourne, their major issue right now, and it's a big, big issue, is scores from stoppages in their defensive 50. It has blown out to numbers you wouldn't believe. I think it's something like they conceded 74 points in the first 13 rounds. They've conceded 74 points in the last six rounds.
Wow.
And every club...
doubled.
And it should be more because they conceded six shots against the Giants. They kicked one goal five. They conceded five or six shots against somebody else, and they only conceded a goal. So that needs to be addressed. And the other thing at the other end
of the ground... So it's been a warning sign for a while, yep.
Indeed. It needs to be addressed. What's going on there has to be fixed. And the other end of the ground, it's simple. It's accuracy. The expected scores on the weekend, a draw. Expected scores against Hawthorn, Melbourne won by three goals. So accuracy will hurt them. It could cost them a prelim final. It could cost them a grand final. They need to sort that out.
And as you've been saying for a number of weeks, it's cost Fremantle a spot in the finals expected scores.
Yep.
Hey, the Furphy unbelievable moment this weekend. I couldn't choose between them, Jared, so I'm just making it both Cody Waitman and Isaac Heaney, the Mark of the Year contenders. That's the Furphy Crisp Lager, easy drinking, full strength, unbelievable. Those two grabs were, in fact, unbelievable.
Incredible. Isaac Heaney, a quick comment. His highs are high. His lows are a bit low. He's got to get his average better.
Okay, so we want the difference between his best and his worst to get smaller. Hey, the Boomers, their worst needs to get better because it was shown up in patches against Nigeria, albeit they got the job done. Chris Anstey is going to talk about it next. You are listening to Sports Day here for Red Energy, World Cancer's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That is Red Energy. And across Tasmania for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. When Jared's phone rings and I see who's on it, it's always interests me. This is a very important phone call, so I'm not sure if he's going to come back during this chat. We've got Aussie basketball great Chris Anstey on the line. I want to talk about the Boomers. Chris, welcome to you. We did a lot of things right last night in the win over Nigeria, but I just have a feeling we're going to have to be a whole lot better if we want a medal.
Yeah, we will. And you're spot on. We did a lot right. We did plenty wrong. And in some regards, that's a real positive sign because people tend to forget Nigeria have eight guys who were on NBA rosters last year. They're very athletic. They're very talented. And they came at us with their physicality and their athleticism. And we withstood that in the first half. And, you know, Brian Gorgian's always had a saying that if you continually apply pressure over the course of a game, you'll eventually break a team. It might not be in the first half or even until the last few minutes, but you will. And I think what we saw was the defensive pressure of the Boomers led by Dante Exum and Matisse Thybulle and the offensive pressure of Paddy Mills and Joe Ingles. It eventually broke Nigeria and we really blew them out at the end of that fourth quarter. So some very pleasing signs. Like I said, at the same time, Aaron Baines was down. He's a notoriously slow starter to international events, so we expect him to get better. And, you know, Dante Exum on the offensive end did a lot wrong, had the right intent, did a lot wrong, but we forget he's only played less than a dozen games in the last 12 months, so we expect great improvement from those two guys in particular.
Yeah, I thought Dante's his energy was great. Like every time he had the ball or went near it, I know he made some mistakes, but he really got his teammates up and about, and we sort of know what we're going to get from a Paddy Mills. What did you make of what the team looked like without Simmons? I mean, I know we're not used to seeing what Australia looks like with Simmons, but did we operate differently to what you thought we might?
No, I thought it was it was what we expected. And the thing is, a few people have asked over the last few days, do we miss Ben Simmons? And the answer is no. And I say that because we've never had him.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What we've been able to do is keep that cohesiveness, keep that, you know, run the same types of sets. Yeah, there hasn't been a re-education by adding a really big piece. The four core guys of that group have been together now. So what we see is, you know, in a lot of ways, what we saw in Rio, defensively, we've dialed it up a notch in the addition of Matisse Thybulle. I just think on top of Dante, on top of Aaron Baines, you know, 2 weeks ago, he'd only met Paddy, and I think he'd only met Daly. He hadn't met any of the other guys on the team. So
yeah,
whatever he's doing already, he's going to do a lot more as his tournament rolls on.
That's kind of one of the big things about international basketball, isn't it? I mean, we saw it later with Team USA all over the shop against France. It's completely different to domestic basketball. The cohesion just isn't necessarily there. I mean, even with preseason camps, right?
Well, Team USA, as you watch them in the lead-up and as you watch them against France, they're really, really dependent on talent. They're really dependent on one-on-one breakdown, moves off the dribble.
Yep.
They're not used to defending on the other end of the floor, motion with guys who don't have the basketball in their hands. They're used to being a lot more stagnant. And they're absolutely going to beat some teams on talent alone. And I thought for the most part they might end up beating France on talent alone. But France's ball movement, that what they were able to do as a group was a little bit too much. And then, you know, without going across every single game, but what you saw from Luka Doncic in the Slovenian game and what he was able to do to Argentina with some role players around him was really, really impressive. So to go back to your first point, yeah, we did a lot right. We need to do a lot better because there are a lot of teams out there who have their eyes on a medal.
Chris Anstey is the Aussie basketball great. Jared's back from his phone call. Must have been an important one. Jared, just talking about the fact that we got over Nigeria, did what we needed to do. We're going to have to be a whole lot better when we come up against Italy on Wednesday night.
Indeed. Sorry, neighbour. I got a phone call from head office at home and just needed to have a little chat, but everything's all okay. It's been a really interesting start, but a lot of the focus is also, I think, in Australia on the women's game and our potential for a gold medal. And that's certainly been knocked around because of Liz Cambage, but it may well, as some suggest, help because the cohesion within the group may be even better.
You know what? There are so many similarities in this Olympic Games between the men's and the women's team in so far as two of the most talented players in Ben Simmons and Liz Cambage maybe don't quite fit into the cohesiveness of Australian basketball as well as the rest of the group. So while we'll undoubtedly miss their talent,
yep,
the sum of the rest of the parts I think we might find to be even greater. So the Opals are in a very similar position. Team USA are the yardstick, and they haven't played yet, so we don't know what they're like. But I expect them to start the tournament really strongly. They've had a little bit more time together than what the men have. But two genuine medal chances. But as we mentioned with the Boomers, I think there are so many teams that are a real chance for a medal. I think we lose sight oftentimes in any international sport as to how much the rest of the world's improving. And I think Tokyo in just 2 days of men's competitions already reminded us of that.
Did you still, Chris, although, you know, we made some errors, did you still see the makings of a medal team from what you saw against Nigeria?
I did. I saw nervousness in Jock Landale. It's his first Olympic preparation. He's got a big responsibility in that starting four spot. He just looked a little bit passive. No doubt he'll be better for the run. Matisse Thybulle, I did. I just think there's a couple more gears in what we do. There's a greater ability to score the basketball, and certainly there's a greater understanding of what we want to get done as a group. And I think one thing that Brian Gorgian did really well in the first game, he got through all 12 players, he got a look at everybody, and while that may have cost us a few points in this game, I think moving forward, if we need one of those guys due to injury or due to foul trouble, it's really important to have had them see some court time in the lead-up game. So we've put ourselves in a good position. We have a very, very different proposition against Italy. Very different, less athletic, but shoot the ball much better than Nigeria, move the ball much better than Nigeria. So a completely different assignment on Wednesday evening our time. Really fascinated to see how they go against them because we should be okay with Germany.
Chris, the coverage is interesting. In some sports, it doesn't matter that there's no crowd. Other sports, it matters a lot. I don't think any sport is impacted more than AFL football from what I've seen without a crowd. How have you viewed the spectacle from your lounge chair?
I've enjoyed watching the sport. I guess being an old and retired sports person and looking through the lens of a coach at times, you see the game and not the surrounds. So I've enjoyed it. I love international basketball. You've already mentioned, Sam, it's a very different game to what domestic basketball is and to what the NBA is. It's just
and it's ref,
a lot of
and
fun.
And it's ref differently, Chris.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, it's physical. Travels are called more tightly. It's such a different game. So you see adjustments. You see completely different styles. I think one thing we'll see to the Australian basketball fan is just how well the rest of the world shoots the basketball. And if there's been a weakness in Australian basketball over the last decade or so, is we just don't have many knockdown shooters, just real high-level elite shooters. And that's why Chris Golding is so dominant here in Australia, but we don't have many Chris Goldings. And what we'll see as we start to see the rest of the world is that every single nation's got two or three Chris Goldings. Mm. And when they're on the floor together, that's a scary proposition.
Chris, we'll chat later in the week. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, gents.
Chris Anstey there about our potential medals in the men's and the women's basketball. It was pretty incredible, Jared, last night. And I'm an NBA lover without being obsessed with it. The difference in how they actually officiate the games is incredible. Like, I don't know another sport where it's almost a different game. I mean, you watch the NBA, they never call travel. LeBron can take four or five steps, and they just don't call it.
Why not?
They say that it's just a better spectacle if you just let the best players play and get away with 50-50 things. And also,
I think we've adopted the same model, haven't we?
Yeah, potentially.
Well, you push in the back, no problem. 10-metre kicks, no problem. Throw the ball, no problem. Bloke going for the ball, if you feel like it, pay a tackle. If not, it's no prior opportunity.
Yeah, if you touch someone in the NBA, it's a foul. You tackle someone in the Olympics, it could be
play on.
It's actually quite amazing if you had highlight reels of both games. People would think it's the same in soccer. It's just not. Usually a foul on one side of the world is a foul somewhere else. I think the Boomers are still a good chance to medal, based on what I'm seeing.
Yep.
And Team USA are just a whole bunch of individuals that don't really look like they want to be there. They were a farcical against France. They got done late last night.
Yeah, they got smacked. They got smacked.
Favourite sport so far that you've been watching? Have you been surprised by anything? Or
Well, I'll tell you what I don't like.
Yeah.
I'll go the reverse.
We'll start with the negative.
I turned on and I saw the tennis. That's the last thing I want to watch when I'm looking for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
I like the kayaking.
Ash Barty played like that too.
Yeah, well, Ash Barty was the person they showed up. I mean, then they had the football, the soccer. Well, they're the two sports for me have got...
Yeah, I understand.
You know, they're peripheral sports. They're not Olympic sports for me.
I get it, because you can watch them at any time of the year.
So my only Olympic experience to date, live, has been the whitewater rafting, which I like.
The slalom?
Yep.
Yeah. Really good. Geez, you've got a lot of upper body strength in that.
Oh, amazing. Amazing control of the kayak, obviously. But I haven't seen enough of it just yet. I'm watching a little bit of surfing. The surfing's...
Hey, can I just ask
sadly, you, in, you know, slop.
Can I ask you about the surfing? Lawrence, just bear with me for a second here. We can't play the audio because we don't have the rights. Steph Gilmore, after she got eliminated, her interview was amazing, I thought. She got out and she said, look, I prioritised the wrong wave.
Yeah.
I got it wrong.
Yeah.
I let my opponent get it.
That's right.
And I got it wrong. I thought to myself, Jared, I know it's obvious for someone like you, but for a novice like me with surfing, isn't it amazing that it's not just about how good a surfer you are? There's decision-making in which wave you go for.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a little bit of luck, obviously, but it's not like you go out to a man-made swell where every wave is the same and it's whoever's the better surfer wins. That's not it.
No, it's very much.
And what an amazing element to the sport that I didn't really consider.
Well, that's when it's head-to-head like it is at this stage of the game. And, I mean, when you've got rubbishy surf, and it's rubbish surf that they're surfing in, the odd wave comes through that's shaped better.
Right.
And if you let that person go and that enables them to be able to do two turns instead of your one turn, you've just gifted them that wave.
Yeah,
and
a long
it makes it even more frustrating if you were in position to A, catch that wave.
Yeah.
And B.
Which Steph was, right?
Exactly. And she had priority. So it was her decision to let the other person take it.
Oh.
Generally, in a good swell, you know there's one coming behind it. And you let good waves go because you think there's a better one coming. But in this stuff where you're lucky to get a turn in. If something shapes up that allows you to do two turns and you don't take it, that is
problems.
Playing with the devil.
I mean, we shouldn't laugh. I'm not laughing on Steph's expense. It was just a really interesting part of the sport for me. And she was so honest about it.
Mm.
I got it wrong. I stuffed up.
Yep.
I paid for it. And I'm out. We're going to
cutthroat, isn't it?
Very cutthroat.
Isn't it?
We're going to keep with Tokyo next. We get the latest from the pool with Julian Linden. A big day for the Australians. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for the Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year, and across Tasmania for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. We've talked a fair bit about swimming in the last hour, Jared, because it has been, well, it's been on everyone's lips, hasn't it, in Australia here.
Well, such after as the day big win today, yes.
Ariane Titmus's swim to knock off Katie Ledecky in one of the great last hundreds, Jared. It must be said, she timed her run to perfection.
And the commentary was pretty spot on as well with Torpedo.
Torpedo was on song. Basil was great. And we're going to go live to Tokyo now where we find Julian Linden, one of the News Corp senior sports writers who's been covering all the goings on in the pool. Julian, welcome. A pretty special day.
Yeah, it was fantastic, wasn't it? I mean, you know, in journalism, we like to tell ourselves that we're not meant to be cheerleaders, but how can you not support someone like Ariane in a race like that? I mean, that was just fantastic, wasn't it?
Absolutely brilliant. We're lucky enough to be able to watch it on the box. Were you there live at the pool?
I was. And I know a lot of people think that there is no atmosphere, but yeah. I can tell you that felt as electric as anything I can remember.
Wow.
I know there's only like 10% of the crowd there, but the ones who were there, they broke all the rules. They were screaming and yelling. I'm sure you've all seen the footage of Dean Boxall going nuts. Well, that's how it felt everywhere, in the press boxes, everywhere. It was just a great race.
How much of it was, I guess, fueled? How much of the euphoria do you think was fueled by the trash talk before the swim?
Look, I think, to be honest, I think from the swimmers, probably not too much.
Yep.
So Katie Ledecky sort of keeps very much to herself. She's pretty reserved. She doesn't really come out and, you know, say a lot of stuff. I mean, and Ariane's a bit more outspoken, but publicly they never really say much, you know, against each other. But what you do see is you see little signs. So, you know, the most visible one was at the World Championships a couple of years ago when Ledecky was just stunned that she'd been beaten and she just basically turned her back on Ariane. Ariane was like celebrating, going, wow, I've just beaten Ledecky. Turned around expecting a hug and mate, they just got her back turned on her. And look, they're not the best of mates, but it's not like they hate each other or anything.
Yep.
You know, they don't follow each other on social media and all that sort of stuff. But I tell you what, the mutual respect they have for each other now has gone to a great level, because whether they like it or not, their lives are intertwined now. They were both part of an historical race, you know, and that'll stay with them forever.
Yep.
I just wonder, Jared, from a mental perspective, you know, you talk a lot about this in tennis with the current greats that we've got. But, I mean, everyone talks about Ledecky as the greatest female swimmer that we've had.
Mm.
And she's still at an age where she can win more, and she's just been knocked off in, you know, one of her prime races. I mean, that it's only going to – it's going to have to spur her on, is it not?
Well, I'm sure it will. She's got another couple of races to be able to, I guess, grab the gold. But
one thing we know about the greatest of all time across all sports is I hate losing.
And they don't like giving they don't tend to retire now at this age. So no. Are you assuming there's another Olympics in Ledecky?
Oh, I expect there will be.
Yeah.
Although, you know what, let's not take it for granted. She's been around a long time.
Yeah.
She started at a very young age. I was actually in Nebraska in 2012 when she was a 15-year-old and just burst on the scene. No one had ever heard of her, and she made the American team. Everyone's like, who's this kid?
Mm.
And she went to London 6 weeks later and won the gold medal. She's been in the spotlight for a long time. She's a distance swimmer. That's a lot of times following the black line up and down the pool. But also, she's very much into it, and she loves it. And now she's got a genuine rival. So I reckon she'll keep going. It's only 3 years away, Paris as well. So I expect we'll see her again. The tennis thing is great because it's a little bit like, you know, I've written a couple of times, I think the Americans sort of jumped the gun by declaring her the greatest of all time, and perhaps they haven't read their history books and heard of Dawn Fraser. But it's a little bit like us all jumping to the gun and saying that Federer was number one before Djokovic sort of got on the scene. Ariane might turn out to be better. We don't know, but she could.
Well, exciting times for us if she does. A couple of bronze medals today. Kyle Chalmers powered home to help the 4x1 get up on the podium.
How about that last 100, Jerry?
Oh, mate, he's a gun, Joel Chalmers.
We were sixth.
He could have been an AFL footballer. He elected to go swimming.
What kind of player would he have been, Urien?
He would have been a darn good one if he was a better player than he was a swimmer. Centre-half back, I think a bit like his old man who played for Port and for the Crows. And Brendan Smith also a bit of a surprise on the finals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, to be honest, I didn't have a lot of great expectations for the guys. We had a couple who have sort of posted some really good times in the lead-up. But they're two surprises. Brendan Smith was terrific in the 400 IM a couple of days ago. And Kyle Chalmers, I mean, his swim was phenomenal. I honestly, someone said to me, like 2 minutes before the race, what chance do you give the Aussies of getting a medal here? And I said, oh, you need two teams to pull over because I don't think we can match it with them. Well, the Russians did fall over a little bit, but they swam great. They swam great. I thought they were all terrific, to be honest. Matt Temple in the leadoff was good, and Zach, and Kyle Chalmers. Look, the 100 metres is such an unpredictable race because it's decided by such small margins. And Caleb Dressel, who's the favourite, also looks really good shape. But Kyle Chalmers is here to race. So he is going to be in the frame. That's going to be another terrific race to watch.
And I guess the only disappointment so far for the Dolphins, Elijah Winnington. The nerves just get to him, do you think?
Yeah, look, to be honest, everybody's fired except for Elijah. And I think, you know, he's got a lot of talent. He's a good kid. He's fine leading into picks were terrific. He looked like he had everything. He hasn't stopped and spoken to the media since we've been here. And Dean Boxall hasn't either, but we're actually speaking to him later today. We'll get an indication whether there was something wrong, whether he got ill, or whether it was nerves, whether he just didn't adjust to the morning finals. But look, he's a lot better than his results showed, and he's still got another chance. He's still in there in the freestyle relay. So we should see him again.
Julian, great to have you on. We'll touch base with you later in the tournament.
Good on you.
Julian Linden there from Tokyo, News Corp senior sports journo. Disappointed for Elijah, Jared, but I guess, you know, I was thinking about, it's one of those sports, swimming, where you can really be affected by nerves potentially more than other sports.
Yep.
I mean...
Why is that?
Well, Maybe track and field's the same, but it's decided by such small margins. And it would be so different swimming in a final to swimming at training, and different to swimming in training to swimming in a heat.
Isn't that the same for all sports? When you get nervous, blokes have bad football games, miss goals.
Yeah, but that's over the course of 2 hours. This is over the course of less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, but you're talking nerves.
Yeah. Maybe you're right.
Nerves, you can see... impacts immediately in a pool. Nerves can make you miss some shots. Then your confidence gets shot and you turn yourself, you self-immolate, and you ask yourself, where did that bad performance come from? Well, originally it was probably I was nervous. I didn't play well. Then I started getting down on myself. And
a lot of those things, though, a lot of those sports, you're up against someone else in a physical sense. Swimming, you really have full control, do you not? It's kind of like, if you swim this time in a heat,
yep.
What is stopping you swimming that time after a rest, fully fit in a final? I mean, the answer is nothing.
In some ways, it's a closed skill.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. It's not, but in some ways it is.
Yeah. I just find it interesting, that's all.
Yep.
Felt shocking for Elijah because he had the fastest time going into the final.
Yeah, it was unfortunate.
And he came seventh. So the only thing it could have been is that he
self-destructed.
He closed up a bit.
Yep.
More Sports Day coming at you right after this.